Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/Midwestern. That's www.audibletrial.com/Midwestern. Welcome, everybody, to the Midwestern Social Scientists. I'm Dr. Kip Pietrantonio.
And this is Keith McIntosh.
And today we are going to be talking about Donald Trump and his run as a potential Republican candidate for president. We're going to be talking a little bit about his character. We're going to be talking about some of the very controversial things he talked about or he said over the last few weeks. We're going to be talking about his unbelievable support base.
I thought you were going to say hair.
His unbelievable hair.
I thought it's to me like this hour was going to be dedicated to Donald's hair.
That's really funny. But we're going to be talking about his the support he's been getting and maybe hypothesize a little bit where that's coming from. It seems a little bit unbelievable coming from our perspective, I think. And so, yeah, we're going to get into that in just a little bit. But first, Mr. Keith McIntosh, how have you been doing?
I've been doing quite well. Wouldn't say spectacular, but I've been doing decent.
Yeah.
Decent enough. Gearing up for my move to Philly, which is quickly approaching.
Yeah.
Also gearing up for going back to the great state of Michigan for work.
That's
what's going on in the domestic sphere in my life.
You're heading back up north.
Heading back up to the great north.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay.
The northern country, as Bob Dylan called it.
Is that what he called it?
Kind of. He's probably talking about Minnesota, but we'll just pretend.
What was the city? Hibbings?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Hibbings, Minnesota?
Somewhere around Duluth.
Yeah, it's actually right by Grand Rapids, Minnesota, from what I recall, or like north of Duluth, like between the two.
Yeah.
So
I wonder how often he goes back there. Can't be
probably
that often.
Never.
Probably never. Yeah.
I imagine he spends a lot of time just touring, so probably whenever he tours near Minnesota.
Maybe. And how's your week been?
It's been really great. Yeah, I had a nice retreat today at work, so it was a nice relaxing day. Enjoyed that a lot, and same old. Feeling pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Living in gratitude.
Living in gratitude. That's kind of our theme right now.
That's our theme right now. That's the life I'm trying to live by. All right. So let's dive in now to Mr. Donald Trump.
To the Donald. Should we call him the Donald or should we call him like President Trump?
No, I think let's just call him Donald for now.
Is that too presumptive to say
I think
President
jumping
Trump?
The gun
yeah.
A little bit. So, Keith, you did a little bit of research on Mr. Donald Trump.
I did.
And I wanted to see kind of what kinds of things did you come up with? Because you always have these wonderful kind of historical facts that kind of influence the view of the contemporary version of the people we talk about.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, I can start off by just giving you a few sort of rough outlines of his life.
Mm-hmm.
He's from New York. He was born in the borough of Queens in the year of 1946, which makes him 69 years old.
It doesn't seem like he's that old. Like, 1946?
The same thing. I mean, I think of people who I know, adults, you know, proper adults, not that we're not adults, but proper adults in my life who were born after that, and they still seem of, you know,
it seems
substantive age.
It seems weird that he was born, like, the year after World War II ended.
Hmm.
You know, he like squeaked by. He just made it in, like, you know.
Well, you know what though? Like as he was, you know, growing up, what did happen was not World War II, but the Vietnam War.
Mm.
And the Donald did not go to Vietnam.
And why was that?
Well, he mentioned, it's funny you ask. He mentioned in an interview that he was just lucky and he got a draft ticket number that was high.
Yeah.
So he didn't have to go for that reason.
Right.
But the Smoking Gun website dug up some info. And it turns out that he was able to get out, I believe, twice because he was a student.
Well, I thought it had something to do with his foot, too.
Oh, I don't know that.
He had, like, a sore in his foot or, like, I can't remember what they call it. It was some kind of bone problem in his foot. And I saw on the news that somebody had asked him, they essentially said, like, which foot was it?
Yeah.
And he couldn't remember. He was basically like, oh, you'd have to look it up in the record. I don't know.
Oh.
You know, and if it was such a pervasive problem, you think he would know, like, which foot. And so that was, like, one of the hypocrisies that I heard about it. So,
I didn't know that. That's interesting to hear. But I definitely read about the student deferment. So was not someone who went to Vietnam. The thing is, his father's name, he was born into wealth. I mean, that's the gist of it. Yeah. His father's name is Fred. Yeah. They had a couple of kids. His father's family is German, and his mother's family is Scottish. I think she was actually born in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred Trump was a real estate developer in New York City, made a bunch of money. I don't know how much money. I imagine quite a bit. And then they had a couple sons, Fred Jr. and Donald. Fred actually ended up dying when he was like 46 or so.
Like Fred Jr. or his
Fred
dad?
Fred Jr., yeah. So Donald's brother passed away. I think it was in 81 or so.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure what the circumstances were about that, but I thought that was interesting to hear.
Were they close? Do you know anything?
I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea.
He must have been the second son then.
Yeah.
Oh, so living in Fred Jr.'s shadow a little
bit. That's kind of what I'm thinking, too. It's just the fact that he was named after the father, Fred Jr. I mean, clearly that kind of mantle was placed upon Fred.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so he dies. What did he die from?
I don't know.
Any idea? Okay.
No, I haven't looked that up.
Keep on moving then.
So, born into wealth, I don't know about privilege. I don't know if he was one of the sort of, you know, whatever, New York aristocracy, but well off.
Yeah.
And he went to a prep school that cost, you know, however many grand a year to go to. So, not public schools. He was separated from a young age. And he had behavioral problems.
Huh.
Which are probably the same kinds of behaviors you see now, I imagine, when he was 13 or so. So he got kicked out of school. He got dismissed when he was 13 or 14.
So that's not just like clowning around kind of stuff. I mean, you get kicked out of a private school. I imagine that's pretty intense because, in most private schools, from what I know and what I've read, I mean, these families are putting so much money into these schools. The kids basically get away with whatever they want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's like, well, okay, you're going to take my kid out of there? I'm going to pull this, like, multi-million-dollar, like, building, you know, project that I pulled, like, I was going to donate out, you know?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I wish I knew the details of what got him dismissed from school, but I guess it must have been pretty serious, right? Like you said, I mean, you don't just get kicked out for no reason.
Especially, like, I mean, it's one thing to get kicked out of an inner city, like, public school, and then to get kicked out of a private school
it's
where
a
you have, like,
a different
lot
animal.
Of, and a lot of individual attention and everything. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So
he was sent to some kind of military academy to sort of get, you know, discipline kicked into him or whatever. Wow. I don't know the details of that, though.
That's really hard for me to get my brain around him going to like a military, like basically getting like the old 90s like trope, like, oh man, they're gonna send me to military school, like that was like a classic staple on like any 90s sitcom for kids.
Yeah, I guess so. It happened to some people though. I guess it really did.
Wow.
One of his first, I thought this was kind of interesting. So he ended up going to University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia.
Wow.
Went to the Wharton School for business. I think he transferred after a couple of years going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his first projects was when he was still in university, when he was still going to school. And it was in the great state of Ohio.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it was in Cincinnati. There's the Swifton Village apartment complex in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Wow.
I don't know where it's at, but anybody down there, if you're listening, Donald Trump invested money in it and helped fix it up and sort of, you know, manicured the lawns and did what he had to do to turn the apartment complex around.
Yeah.
So he basically inherited his father's business.
Wow.
Long story short, he was born into a family of real estate developers and he took the helm.
And I think that's like something that I'm really glad you brought that up, Keith, because that's something that I would have like not thought of at all. I think the perception he has sent out to the world is like, I'm this self-made man, you know, that has essentially built my own business. I build these giant buildings. I put like my name on it, you know, like I'm this self-made man. You don't think of him just like kind of inheriting a bunch of real estate, you know, experience and probably resources that his dad already had for him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, it takes skill, I suppose, once you inherit the money to grow it or even to maintain it, you know? Because people are always, I imagine if you have that much wealth, people are fighting to take it away from you in various ways. But obviously, there's a huge gulf between someone who's born poor and out of their own ingenuity and luck and crazy determination end up making millions of dollars versus someone who's born into a family that already owns a business where you don't have to get anything up off the ground. It's already there running for you. And then you just sort of take the leadership position.
Yeah. I always think that that's like the most scummy like wealth to make is kind of like owning apartment complexes and things like that, because you're essentially like a lord.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You are basically a lord.
Yeah,
you
that's interesting.
You are owning land and charging people to live on it.
You know, like when people talk about a, like a county as a piece of land?
Yeah.
I didn't realize it came from like you know, Count Dracula or Count whoever. Like back in the day, you had a count.
Wow.
And that was like a type of person, and they owned a plot of land, and the peasants were on that land, and those became known as counties.
Wow.
And even though America never had the whole, you know, Middle Ages history, mm-hmm. like the name stuck.
That's unbelievably cool.
So Trump, Trump is
like,
I don't know.
So it's like Lord Trump, you know, like all these people that like live in his buildings, fucking Lord Trump.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, there's a lot of people who came up, I think of John Kennedy, or people who were born into wealth, who were clearly decent people, and who had, you know, a good head on their shoulders, or, mm-hmm. or whatnot. But it is hard to be as to feel the same admiration for somebody born into wealth compared to somebody who earned it themselves.
Yeah, well, I also think though that some would argue John Kennedy and none of the Kennedys are really those that great of people. I mean, I think I mean, I'm not saying me, I wouldn't argue that, but I could, like, Republicans would have a lot of ammunition to fire, you know, between the affairs and the deaths of people and things like that, you know. And kind of the sleazy things that are kind of have gone on in that household, you know.
I think most people like Bobby, but of course he died too, you know, young.
So I mean, some people would say that you know, there's some that being born into like an affluent household kind of gives you a little bit of a sense of entitlement around like what you should be able to do in the world.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
And I also think that he was just like, kind of like, you know, Barack Obama gets to kind of benefit from like, you know, there's a change, there's a shift from like old culture into youth culture right now in the society. Like mm-hmm. millennials are like kind of taking over the world.
Yeah.
You know, and Obama being what I think is perceived as like a younger president, you know, compared to like a Donald Trump who's in his nearly 70, or like a Bernie Sanders or something like that, he gets to benefit, like, because he can kind of, it seems that he seems more relatable to youth.
Yeah.
I think the same thing happened with JFK in like the late 60s when something was clearly shifting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there was a clear shift going on, it's not the late 60s, like the 60s in general. There's a shift going on toward youth culture and like a societal change shifting toward youth values. And I think as a result, JFK gets a little bit of like, people really love him because of that.
Yeah, romanticize
him. But if you
him.
Really look at him, he did, like, I mean, the Bay of Pigs kind of occurred. He was only president for basically, what, like 2 years? 3 years?
It was short, maybe 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, there was the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Bay of Pigs, like a lot of civil rights things that didn't go well. I mean, there was a lot of bad stuff that happened. And, you know, he had an affair with Marilyn Monroe that's like pretty well documented. There was kind of the expansion of the CIA and the FBI during that time. Mm. You know, there was some stuff that wasn't so great. And I think sometimes people romanticize the idea that he was like this young president, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I mean, from what I understand, a lot of his ideas in terms of civil rights then went on and were passed by Johnson. Like, Johnson had the muscle and the skill to actually pass stuff that JFK kind of dreamed up or whatever.
Yeah.
I think there's something important, though, about like symbolism. And it's easy to dismiss because you can say, oh, well, that's just, you know, people like him because of the way he looks.
Right.
And obviously that's superficial, like just for, you know, face value reasons. But I actually think there is more to it than that. I think there is something important about a story, the story that a people tells itself and like the important players and so on and so forth. So to me, even though I think in terms of passing legislation, he's not going to be a powerhouse or he's not a big player. In terms of like the meaning of sort of what he was in American history, he's still an important figure and someone that I kind of admire. It's interesting, you brought up Obama, that people absolutely compare Obama and him.
Yeah.
It's an interesting comparison. I don't know how deep it goes or not. I know there's a photograph that the White House press secretary released of one of his daughters kind of playing under the desk. Mm. And it was reminiscent of an old photograph of JFK. With
his kids playing under the desk. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So the image is natural, but I think also kind of artificial. It's been, he's kind of been branded that way.
Because he was the first president that had like young kids in the White House.
Yep.
Like everybody else's kids had already like basically grown up and everything.
So let me ask you this. Often in history, like a pendulum swings back and forth. You see often when times get liberal, the consequence of that is they turn kind of conservative.
Yeah.
So if we've just had a kind of, if Obama is some kind of JFK figure, does it follow that we might end up with a business mogul, 70-year-old Republican? AKA Donald, the Donald Trump.
The Donald Trump. You know, I think that, I don't know if Donald is the other end of that, pendulum.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it's, you know, I don't really get the whole him running and being successful at all. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a piece of like catharsis for people to like watch him say really ridiculous things,
yeah.
You know, to say things about like Mexicans or to say things, you know, about John McCain or something like that. Like people like to see somebody being kind of like a straight shooter, you know, on TV. Yeah. But the thing is being a straight shooter is great unless you're saying the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're saying the wrong things, like, that's not, you're not being a good straight shooter. You're kind of just being, like, an asshole. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this on the podcast last week, I think, but I was at, like, a hotel breakfast, like, not long ago in West Virginia and was listening to some older people talk about mm-hmm. politics. And they mentioned the more they listened to Donald Trump, the more they liked him. And their reasoning was that he just tells it how it is. Mm-hmm. Exactly what you said, that he's a straight shooter. So I think you're right. I think that's his draw, his strength. I mean, it's the plus and the minus, right? So his negative is that he's can be seen as arrogant or he's not tactful.
Yeah.
But then the plus is he's honest and he's like blunt and you can trust him, I guess, because he just tells it how it is.
But you can't really trust him though, because like for example, when you look at like the actual facts related to the things he said, and I know you're gonna talk about this a little bit later, but maybe we can jump into it now.
Keith, yeah.
Is the quote about Latinos and undocumented individuals coming into this country? So what he actually said was something along the lines of, I don't know if you have the direct quote, but he basically said like Mexico is not sending like good people over here. They're sending their rapists, their murderers, their drug dealers, all these bad people, and then he kind of taglined at the end, and I'm sure there's some good people too,
yeah,
you know. And he was basically saying like, we need to deport these people, we need to get them out of here, we need to stop giving them opportunities, etc., etc.
Our country is in serious trouble. We don't have victories anymore. We used to have victories, but we don't have them. When was the last time anybody saw us beating, let's say, China in a trade deal? They kill us. I beat China all the time. All the time. When did we beat Japan at anything? They send their cars over by the millions. And what do? When was the last time you saw a Chevrolet in Tokyo? It doesn't exist, folks. They beat us all the time. When do we beat Mexico at the border? They're laughing at us, at our stupidity. And now they're beating us economically. They are not our friend, believe me. But they're killing us economically. The U.S. has become a dumping ground for everybody else's problems. Thank you. It's true. And these are the best and the finest. When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. Mm-hmm.
That's like, I could see from somebody who's very sick of like American jobs being lost to undocumented immigrants, I could see that being something that's very cathartic for a person who's angry about that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, it's just not accurate. Mm-hmm. You know, first of all, Mexico is not sending anybody here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no government officials being like, okay, go run across the border.
There's no organization
like sending anybody across here. Uh-huh. And they're definitely not telling it's not like they're catching criminals and sending them over here. So that right there is talking about this like kind of theoretical they that is Mexico, mm-hmm. which doesn't exist. And the second thing is, when they look at like crimes committed it's not like there's not a higher percentage of undocumented folks committing crimes compared to documented folks. And in fact, undocumented folks are trying so hard to stay under the radar that they like avoid the police like the plague often, are very law-abiding citizens.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, so, and this is not just Kip saying this. This is backed up by studies, you know, that have shown that undocumented folks are not any more likely to commit a crime than documented folks.
Yeah.
The other thing is it paints this picture of undocumented immigrants as essentially being the, you got to picture this like old, like
criminals, like basically.
This old kind of rough looking Mexican guy who's like a criminal, but you know, tons and tons of undocumented folks are just kids who were brought here when they were little tiny kids in the 70s and 80s, you know, so their parents could do labor up here, and they've been here since they were children and have no connection to Mexico at all. They just don't have papers because they were here when they were two. You know, and that's like, and they're in college, you know, and they're working and they're living a regular life. And you'd never know, you know, you never know. They don't have a driver's license or they don't have like any type of social security or they can't get on an airplane because they're just living their life.
Yeah.
You know,
so what do you think that appeals to then when he makes a comment like that? And it's posed as controversial. I mean, even on Fox News, if you listen to him and Bill O'Reilly talk, I mean, he's presented with that as a controversial statement. He's asked to stand behind it or to denounce it or whatever. But even with that media coverage, his poll numbers actually increase.
Yeah.
So you think maybe there's a group of like sort of middle class or maybe more working class white Americans who have felt marginalized in light of Obama, first black president, gay rights movement, all this sort of stuff, the other, you know, different types of people are gaining in prominence. And the sort of civil rights with African Americans, civil rights 2.0, the sort of new generation. Do you think that kind of talk about the foreigner, literally or metaphorically, is appealing these days?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're a Republican and you got to step into Republican shoes when you hear these comments, and you feel like your country is being invaded by, like, and you're like, you're listening to Fox News, you're like buying into all the stuff that they're saying, and you feel like, oh yeah, like the Mexican government is like sending people over here, and you hear that stuff, I could totally see that being cathartic because that's your reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you believe.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, I think people do buy into it. The other thing is, I think it's just the classic, one of my favorite people in the world, this guy named Eric Bischoff. He used to run a wrestling company a long time ago called WCW. He wrote a book that I love this book because it's about basically building a company. He wrote this book called Controversy Creates Cash, you know, and this book, he basically talks about how, you know, building a successful business is all about is like, you know, especially in show business, is making people look one way and then all of a sudden you make a big noise on the other side and you turn your head and you go, wait, what the heck's going on over there? You know? So essentially what's happening is Donald Trump is getting way, way, way more platforms to talk than all of the other Republican candidates because he's responding to all this controversy.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's bringing on Lindsey Graham. And I'm not sure what the heck is going on there. Nobody's bringing these people on because they're just Trump, 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 Trump. Like, you watch any news channel, it's all they're talking about. And the more exposure he gets, the more he's going to look like a legitimate candidate, you know?
So it's all about press coverage. It's all about saying anything that will get you airtime because even if, what is it, the old adage, sort of any press is good press?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Any controversy is good controversy? Yeah. Something like that?
And the funny thing is, I don't want to paint this picture that I think Donald Trump is sitting here like, haha, I'm going to make up these like things and I'm going to say them. I think he is just doing his thing. Like, he's just saying these really ridiculous things.
Just doing the Donald.
He's just doing the Donald.
He's doing
man.
The Donald, man.
He's just rolling up Donald style, man.
He's just being free, you know?
Yeah, he's just being free. Donald, he's just Trump, throwing down the Trump card.
He's doing, that's a great one, yeah, the Trump card. Pulling the Trump card. He's doing what he's done for decades.
And I think
decades.
As a result, like, it's just, he's kind of fallen into a golden machine a little bit, or he's fallen into like this wonderful thing that just like the system works really well because he just keeps saying ridiculous things, you know?
Yeah, he's just it's just some machine. You feed it the more ridiculous sort of statements you feed it, the better off you are.
Right.
Yeah, so let me give you a few more tidbits from his bio.
Okay.
So he was doing business and doing well, say in the 80s, fairly well, but at some point he ran into trouble. And he had to file for business bankruptcy in 1991 and came very close to having to file for personal bankruptcy.
Yeah. And when did his brother die again?
I think it was 80 in the 80s.
81, you said?
I thought so. I don't have it written down. I don't have it written down, but I think it was 81. Yeah.
And then when did you file bankruptcy?
A decade later.
That's interesting.
But the 1990s after that saw his fortunes swing upward.
Yeah.
He did really well. And then the main thing was his brand, the Donald brand, really took off.
Yeah.
The Forbes magazine estimated that his wealth in 2015 was $4.1
billion. Wow.
But I've seen everything from, you know, 8 and 9 billion down to, say, 2. So there's quite a wild gap there.
Huh. What is his brand? Like, is that he sells, like, I know he sells cologne.
That's funny. That's one of the things I wrote down. He has his own fragrance. Yeah. It came out in 2004.
Smells like him.
So if he became president, he would be the first president with his own fragrance.
Yeah.
He could smell like a president. They just call it Prez. Prez. Prez.
Yeah. Oh, my God. What is he? I wonder what
he's got
smells.
A board game.
Yeah.
Trump the game.
Is it like Monopoly, I imagine?
Probably. Yeah. Probably. I don't know if there's like a wheel, like a hairpiece that you move around the board or
that
something.
Would be awesome, little hairpiece.
So, and then he started a TV show that he was the main boss on, literally the boss, called The Apprentice.
Yeah.
In 2003. I remember watching that. Did you watch that ever?
Yeah, I didn't watch it, but I know the you're fired thing.
You're fired. I have no choice. You're fired. Hey, for 2 weeks, you've been on the edge. You know that. But now we have to go. You're fired, sir.
Well, he also ran like Miss America or something, didn't he?
That's right.
Yeah.
So all of these things constitute the brand. He really put himself out there as not just a retail mogul or a estate mogul, but as an interesting as a character. Basically, mm-hmm. He sold himself as a character. He's a straight shooter. He's, you know, distinctive looking. He talks in a certain way. He acts mm-hmm. in a certain way. It's aggressive. It's, you know, kind of mm-hmm. in your face. But it's also, like, very honest. He's a businessman, so he's got to just lay it out there. This is the bottom line. That kind of mentality. He sold that as the Trump brand.
But, Mr. Trump, you're not a nice person.
We don't need nice.
That's true. But actually, I am. I think I am a nice person.
And right. built that up, especially in the 2000s. And then he mentioned that he was interested in running for president. In 1988, 2004, and then more recently, 2012.
The American dream is dead. But if I get elected president, I will bring it back bigger and better and stronger than ever before, and we will make America great again. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And each time didn't really amount to anything. But of course, this go around, he seems to be pretty damn serious about it.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the funny thing about I hate this about presidential candidates year after year, is we always assume that their like success in business or their success or something would somehow translate to success in running a country.
I like China. I just sold an apartment for $15 million. To somebody from China.
And I think that's kind of bullshit, to be honest. Like, for example, this guy, Donald Trump, he, like, went out of business. I mean, he basically filed for bankruptcy, you know? And as a result, he was able to, like, start over, and because he had enough, you know, basically cultural capital.
Yeah, here's a quote.
Yeah.
I have made tough decisions, always with an eye toward the bottom line. Perhaps it's time America was run like a business.
Yeah. What do you think about quote, Keith?
It's tough, you know. I think actually there's probably certain qualities that run parallel in running a business and in running a country.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of organization, structure, in terms of figuring out what the bottom line is metaphorically,
mm-hmm.
In terms of having the issue not be theoretical but being practical.
Right.
Looking for real results,
right.
How to actually get things done. I think that's a really important quality. I don't think it's like ridiculous that somebody who has experience in business and management might make a good president. The problem is when you're running a country isn't a business. You know,
right.
It is a different organization. And there's a kind of back to the symbolic quality. There's something, there's a different kind of value, I think, mm-hmm. in running a country. And I think it's important that the president also sort of radiates a certain attitude towards the world and has communication skills that are not just like direct and transparent, that's good too, but also sensitive and subtle and nuanced. You're willing to really like see both sides of things and mm-hmm. sometimes deal with shades of gray. I think that's a really, it kind of boils down to that in a sense. Business is about black and white. It's about the bottom line. But when you deal with human beings, it's always gray. It's always figuring out how this person feels and that person feels, and, you know, looking at like the complexity of relationships between countries. And I don't see someone like Donald Trump filling that role very well.
Yeah.
And that's my main problem with him.
Well, I went on his website, like his DonaldJTrump.com website, like where he's running for president. And one of the press releases he has, like right on the front page, is how he would change his rhetoric if he was running for, if he was actually president.
To a more subtle...
Yeah, like I assume so. Like he would basically be more of a dignitary.
Yeah.
As opposed to being kind of like a... He's Commander. Being more of a politician, businessman right now. I want to revisit, though, really quick, going back just for a second, to that idea you said earlier about how America could be run more like a business and those things are valuable.
Mm-hmm.
My argument would be that America actually is run like a business. And I would say of all the countries probably on this planet, like America's run more like a business than any other country. In fact, if you could argue that like our number one job as a business is to put the other countries out of business or make them not competitors mm-hmm. with us, we have done the best job at that of any country in the history of the world. You know, like anybody who is even like remotely a threat to us,
mm-hmm.
we have like taken them apart, or that we have made them our ally, or some kind of financially dependent on us.
Yeah.
You know, so to me, it's whenever I hear people being like, "Oh, America needs to be run more like a business," I'm like, "We are like the kings of capitalism. Like we are run like a business. You know, and we really do a good job putting our competitors out of business. You know, I mean, we have such power over our competitor countries. We can like set sanctions. We can veto things that they decide as a country."
Run like a business, just meaning like it's like there's a competition between different groups and you're trying to, it's a competitive situation.
Right. Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Compared to like making money or something. I mean, is that what you see? That's like the comparison?
Well, I don't see America, like the government of America seems much more concerned with the competition between itself and other countries
mm-hmm.
than improving the quality of like the people within it.
Hmm.
You know,
that's really, yeah, that's really interesting. It's really, really damning too, because so many other countries, it's all about building up the quality of life within the country.
And that's what I mean. Like, if that's what a non-business-like country is like they're just, like, concerned with helping their own people.
Switzerland
and,
or something.
Like, humanitarian efforts and, like, just making everything nice with, you know, not, like, the money is getting spent inward mm-hmm. rather than, like, being spent outward to, like, destroy competition, mm-hmm. you know? It just seems like that's exactly the opposite of what we do, you know? So it's hard for me to picture another country on this planet that is run more like a business than ours. You know, so to be like, oh, we need to even go more in that direction, you know, like, what does that mean? What does that mean for Donald Trump to run our country more like a business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess the fear is that it means cutting services that aren't directly helping the economy be more productive, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would mean like welfare. Or if there was like some program to help people go to college, basically mm-hmm. any situation where people are given free money
mm-hmm.
to help them out in some kind of way mm-hmm. for like social betterment, but not something that can be seen in terms of dollars and cents or the mm-hmm. bottom line, I guess those things would be up for being dismantled.
Right.
I think that's what it means.
And what would we then use that money for, do you think?
I don't know. Put it in the bank?
Buy
an apartment complex.
Apartment complexes all over the world. You know, put Trump in it.
Yeah, I don't know.
/ Trump on them.
Reduce the debt or put it and use it in some other manner. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's one other great quote along the same lines: the greatest jobs president that God ever created, Donald Trump, 2015. Boom.
That's what he said about himself?
That's what he said about himself.
The greatest jobs president that God ever created.
Wow.
He might be right. He might be the greatest jobs president that God ever created.
Right. So first of all,
we don't know what that means. I think where we're struggling is we have no friggin' idea what that means.
It means nothing. The other thing, the thing that's crazy about it is, first of all, like, Jesus Christ, be a little more narcissistic, you know? It's like, you're literally claiming that God created you for this purpose of creating jobs in America.
Interesting when you think about it. Like, you would figure philosophically, someone like Donald Trump, who is a businessman through and through,
yeah,
would not want government. Would want government to be out of the way and incredibly small. He would probably say, philosophically, the only legitimate purpose of government is to protect the people. Mm-hmm. Government has military or police on a local level to protect people.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, the population just goes about their lives. They live their lives. They open up stores and trade and, you know, do their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the government's role to provide anybody with food or money in the form of welfare or any kind of help whatsoever. That's not the government's role.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that he would want to ascend to that position and then be the governing body or be at the helm of the governing body. So I guess that's why we're so confused, because it's when you think business, you think kind of the opposite of government. Government is about helping people out in that kind of way. And business is, you know, sort of like do it yourself.
Yeah.
So when the ultimate, you know, business mogul becomes the president, it's everybody, we're scratching our heads like, well, what does this entail and what does this mean?
But do you feel like it's maybe kind of like a Reagan-esque thing? It's like,
oh, yeah.
They're basically just saying like, hey, you're going to be able to, we're going to put you in office, like you're a charismatic speaker and everything, and then you're just going to do whatever we tell you to do. Like there's that one really, have you ever seen that really famous clip? It's like Reagan giving a little speech and some guy who's like some big CEO basically like tells him what to do.
No.
It's this really weird clip. I can't remember, and I could talk about it more. Maybe I could put it on the Facebook page or something
that.
But it's just basically like Reagan is like talking and giving a speech, and like some guy is just like talking to him and is kind of like, wrap it up, let's get out of here, you know?
And he just does it?
And then he like does it, and it's like it's like some big businessman or like banking guy. And they just said it was like such a weird situation to watch like a banking person essentially tell the president like what to do, you know?
Yeah, tie my shoes while you're at it.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. So I kind of wonder if that's kind of what it is. It's not so much that like the businessman really wants to become this. It's just like he would be like, oh, I can open the floodgates for businesses to do all kinds of crazy unregulated shit, you know?
Yeah, maybe that's the point. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you hear someone like Obama talk about the country, he describes it in kind of like poetic terms almost, you know, mm-hmm. he describes, or almost like you, when you listen to like, you know, Martin Luther King's speeches,
mm-hmm.
it's not about dollars and cents. It's about feelings. It's about, you know, we've suffered this injustice and I want this future that's going to be painted in a different way. And you hope that your leader has a little bit of that, whatever, pizzazz, has a little bit of that vision. Maybe is a more dignified word to use than pizzazz. But Trump, I don't think he's ever spoken in that kind of manner. And when he does talk about people, it ends up being offensive because it's some, you know, broad-stroked kind mm-hmm. of ridiculous picture of, say, Mexicans crossing the border or whatever the issue happens to be. It's hard for me to picture him
picture him being empathetic to anybody.
It's hard for me to picture him as a leader of men.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know what else I think is, and then also the other funny thing is, this just came up for me when we talk about being kind of empathetic to people. You know, do you remember that, like, 4 years, like, I guess 6 or 7 years ago now, we had, like, a giant fallout in this country due to what industry?
Banking.
Banking related to what industry?
Real estate.
He's smiling already.
Like, that's funny. I didn't think about that until right now.
Yeah.
I wonder if he had any connection in terms of like his dealings, if they were tied in. I suppose they would have had him been to the, you know, fallout.
Well, that's the funny thing is like, isn't it ridiculous that he's touting himself as like this like successful businessman, and he is in the business that nearly bankrupted the country.
That almost brought the country to its
like
knees.
Almost brought the country down, you know, and we had to bail out these industries because of these loans for, you know, competitory lending, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just crazy to think about.
Yeah, the idea of banking, it's incredibly, incredibly important. It is like the lubricant for the economy, and it's an absolute mm-hmm. necessity. But at the same time, you're making money from money. And there's something kind of evil about that. Every world religion talks about the evil of usury.
Yeah.
You know, like charging interest seems innately
It's like the
shitty.
One time Jesus was violent.
Yeah, the money lenders in the temple.
Yeah, he like slaps the table over, you know, he's like, you know, it's like the one time Jesus was like, I'm a pretty cool guy, but today, you know?
Don't lend money, buddy.
Yeah, don't lend money.
So what is it? Why is usury such a horrible thing? Is the idea that if you have, say, extra, and you're in a position to lend that out, you do it out of like the goodness of your heart, and you care about somebody. You say, mm-hmm. hey, I've got extra, and I don't need it right now, so you take it, 3 months down the line, when you can pay me back, you pay me back the exact figure that I gave to you.
Mm-hmm.
I lose nothing. I lose nothing, but I help you. It's sort of like Christopher Hitchens used to say, he really likes the idea of giving blood.
Yeah.
Because he loses nothing. His body regenerates the blood quickly, but now someone else gets to use that blood who needs it. But if you charge interest when you loan money, you're basically exploiting somebody in a shitty situation.
Right.
You're saying like, you know, yeah, I know you don't have the money now, but you're going to have to accept this deal for the benefit of what I'm giving you.
Right.
And then I'm sort of exploiting you long term.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, and this is something I don't hear people talk about a lot, but I think about a lot, is the vantage point in these industries is often very important. So, for example, a person, you can easily dismiss some guy who buys a house. He only makes like $30,000 a year, and he buys like $150,000 house. And it's like, okay, yeah, we're going to give you a 50-year mortgage, and you can pay it off over 50 years. And for the guy, he might just be like, oh yeah, like this is normal. You know, people pay on mortgages like their whole life and it's worth it to me. But he doesn't have the vantage point that the bank has, where they're able to say like, hey, based on your job, based on your demographics, we know that there's an 83% chance that you're not going to be able to pay this back. You know,
yep.
So they have all this information and data versus the subjective experience of somebody else, you know, and so that's what bothers me, because that guy, you know, his wife might lose her job, or he might lose his job, or he has to take a pay cut, or, something happens, or he gets injured on the job or something. Like, they're the ones who know that stuff happens and are able to predict it, you know, pretty accurately, because they've given out thousands of these loans, so they have all these numbers. Versus you as a person going in for a loan office, you're just kind of at their will.
So are you saying that it's the responsibility of the banks not to loan money out to someone who doesn't know what to someone who can't afford to?
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying totally, like, people have to do their own research of everything, but if the information is available, you should be able to turn your computer to that person and be like, look at, man, like, people in your situation, there's a 75% chance, like, this is going to hurt you financially, mm-hmm. and that's why we're not going to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. I guess part of it, too, is ideally everyone, all parties are in a situation where if the person defaults, it's bad for everyone. So the bank has an incentive to not lend money to someone who's going to default.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the problem with it's too complex for me to understand the details, but part of the problem with what happened in 2008 was banks weren't held responsible. So they didn't have any, there weren't any repercussions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was sort of like, I don't know.
Things just kind of fell, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and it was also the idea that they were like selling people's mortgages off. You know, so there's just this big merry-go-round of money going round and round and round, you know?
Yeah, all based on complicated estimations of risk.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a big problem. But anyway, so this is how Donald Trump made his money, you know, essentially doing this. And I just think it's hilarious that here we are today saying that, like, this guy who's this businessman could potentially do some really great things. And the truth is he really can't, you know?
Yeah.
The other thing is, I mean, I think almost everybody you talk to realizes that there's, like, a kind of a living satire to this.
Oh, yeah.
Going on.
I mean, it's sort of a circus, isn't it? I mean, mm-hmm. isn't it? I mean, just this guy who's this sort of, like, tall, orange, kind of bronzed, man.
Snooty.
Yeah, he's almost 70. But I want to say octogenarian. That's the name for somebody in their 80s. I don't know what the name for somebody in their 70s would be. He's an old person, though.
Yeah.
And he's got a giant toupee mm-hmm. that he sort of parades around, and
his hair's fake?
I think if you walked into his closet, you would just see, like, a wall full of hair.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's got lots and lots of different toupees. I think maybe, every time he eats a meal, he changes the toupee.
Really?
I don't know. But this is a crazy man. This is an odd duck who's, like, super aggressive and, like, macho and has this kind of arrogant way of speaking. He's not diplomatic, you know? Mm-hmm. Think about, like, a diplomat, like, literally a diplomat, somebody who works as a diplomat, or somebody who's just diplomatic in life. And whether they're famous or whether there's somebody that's in your office, you know, just somebody you work with, who's, like, very even-tempered, and they're mm-hmm. able to, like, get along with people. Like, how they speak and how they present themselves. That same person can be a leader. Mm-hmm. Those qualities can be tied together. I think probably in Obama, maybe in Bill Clinton, they're tied together.
Yeah.
Trump is, like, the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on television saying inflammatory stuff. He made a comment about John McCain. I don't know if you caught that,
Kip. Yeah.
He basically said, he was speaking nasty about McCain, the guy leading the discussion, said, well, hold on, he's a war hero. And then Trump's kind of like, nah, he's not a war hero. He was a prisoner of war. He got captured. He's a hero. He's a war hero because he got captured. Well, I like people who weren't captured.
Yeah.
That's the comment.
Right.
Low class. I mean, Isn't it just a classless, nasty comment, to say the least? It's stupid, but forget about that. It's just kind of like a nasty thing to even say.
Yeah.
So here we are running up to the next presidential election, this grand sort of like performance. You know, it's supposed to be all adult and serious, but it is a kind of like performance. It's a bit of a show. And it sort of feels like a circus already to me because of his presence.
Right. I think the thing that's mind-blowing, though, is how he's, like, winning, you know? It's, like, among Republicans, like, he's basically getting the vote, you know? He's, like, above anybody else. Part of that is just because nobody else is talking, really, yet. The other thing is there's this potential of him running as a third party. Because he basically said, like, the Republican Party has not reached out to me yet. Like, they have not tried to take me under their wing.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's the satire thing that we're kind of talking about. It's like nobody's taking this seriously, you know? It's like this guy obviously is not a real contender, you know? And I almost wonder if it's kind of parallels like Arnold Schwarzenegger in California.
No. Yeah.
Because people basically, when he threw his hat in the ring for governor at first, it was kind of like, oh, is this like a joke? You know, like the Terminator is going to be the governor.
Yeah, the governor. You know?
And now he like became like the governor, like it happened, you know?
I know. Yeah.
And like, I'm wondering if there is any chance that Donald Trump will turn that corner, you know?
I don't know. The Schwarzenegger situation, I think, is incredible. I mean, it's sort of, I'm dumbfounded by it, but as far as I know, he was, you know, a decent enough governor. People liked him out there. Yeah. I guess his story is a bit different, though, because he was someone that came from modest upbringing and through like unbelievable will. First in obviously exercising and working out, but later in acting and so on, through just incredible will, went from the bottom up to this crazy, you know, high position. So he is kind of in keeping with the American ethos of work hard and get ahead and go from the bottom and get to the top, which is kind of different than Trump. I think of Reagan too, though. He was just this B-list actor that nobody really knew, you know, then getting elected governor of California as well. It's quite an amazing... Maybe the Californians are strange people. That might be all it is.
Yeah.
They're weird ducks out there in California.
Right. But, I mean, do you think that there's any chance that Donald can turn the corner?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think there's a chance. I think he is smart. I think he is a good actor. I think he has some sense of narrative and how to tell a story. So I think he's setting himself up as a certain type of person right now because he knows there's a lot of people who will respond to him in a certain way, basically as a straight talker. And I think if he's able to carry that far enough without tripping on his face, in which case his toupee would certainly roll off, he could then adopt a different persona, a different narrative, which is more dignified and more subtle. And I think if he plays his Trump card right, he could actually, I think, go far. Yeah. I can't picture him getting elected. That seems almost...
Now, what about being like a vice president?
Or
holding some kind of position?
I don't know. Maybe.
See, you know what I think is going to happen is he's going to beat the crap out of every other Republican candidate so much, like he gave Lindsey Graham's phone number out, you know, to everybody. Yeah. That he's going to be so disrespected that I actually think that both the Democrats and the Republicans are going to start like sicking the dogs on him a little bit, like the media dogs on him. So maybe they're letting it go right now because it's like, oh, this isn't real yet, not until like Iowa, you know?
Yeah.
Like, but eventually what's going to happen is like, you know, you do something like that to a Republican leader, like the dogs are going to get sicked on you eventually.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's probably true.
The other thing is he's never held any type of office.
No, not that I know.
So he has like no experience at all.
He's got lots of business experience. He's got lots of media experience. And he would probably say that's all you need these days to be a great American president.
Yeah.
His first wife was Ivana. Remember her? Ivana Trump.
Yeah, I remember that.
She's from Czech Republic. They had three kids together. They were divorced. She was, I think there was some controversy with her. I don't know. She's a model.
Yeah.
And a socialite. And his new wife, Melania, M-E-L-A-N-I-N. She's from Slovenia. And they have one son together, born recently in 2006.
Wow.
So he's what, 10 years old now, something like that?
Wow.
Maybe 9.
So he had that kid at like 59 years old.
Yeah. That's
pretty interesting.
Virile man. She's a beautiful young woman. I don't know what her name or her age is, but just to see photographs of her, I mean, she's like, you know, a model.
Yeah.
It would be very odd even just to see her as the first lady, especially after Michelle Obama, who just seems like such a normal human being. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All things considered, just like a very practical, decent lady. To see this sort of blonde bombshell as the first lady.
Yeah. It almost kind of reminds me of that movie, like, Idiocracy.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, it feels like a step in that direction, like, where the president in that movie is basically a pro wrestler, you know? He's just, like, a guy who's just, like, shooting guns off and stuff. It just feels like if we were going to go in that direction, like, this is the first step, is to, like, elect somebody like this. Because it really opens a door, you know?
Yeah, I mean, just occasionally countries elect people with a lot of character, and often in a bad way. I think of Berlusconi in Italy, who's not elected anymore. In fact, I think, I don't know if he went to prison or if that fell away, but he was just this sort of old Italian playboy type, slapped women's asses on the way into a limousine, you know, that kind of thing. Just this. But the country people loved him because he was like a real Italian man, I guess. Then the cosmopolitan people who are like sort of more educated or whatever, more professional, found him embarrassing. But occasionally these kinds of figures pop up in the world. And I see him as that kind of figure. And I probably people in Europe and all over the world are kind of scratching their heads like, what is it that Americans see in this figure? And I guess we're scratching our heads too to some extent.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think, but I really think even common folks, like even when I talk to my parents and stuff like that, you know, back home, like, you know, it's almost, it's like a joke. It's like a reality. Did you watch that? It's like the Kardashians or anything else. Like, it's like, oh my God, you hear what he said? Like, what a crazy thing. You know, like, it doesn't feel like there's any legitimacy to him. And I think that the increase in polls and everything, I don't know. Do you wonder if that's like a joke? Or I just don't understand it.
You know? I think you're underestimating a lot. I think there are a lot of people out there who do like his straight talk attitude. And it's as simple as that. You know, he's a Christian. He's a successful businessman. And he's being honest about something that's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Has he even been, he's been like divorced like three times, hasn't he?
I think twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. Apparently
I
not.
Guess it doesn't. It doesn't matter. Not these day and age.
Yeah.
This time.
That's funny. You know how, like, Michelle Obama has her, like, getting in shape, like, initiative? You know? It's
yeah.
like, movement, like, initiative. Like, what do you think his, like, Slovenian wife's, like, initiative would be?
I don't even want to think. Diamonds for everyone.
Diamonds for everyone.
How to, yeah, how to spot, like, a real diamond in comparison to a fake.
That would be ridiculous.
Don't want people of America need to know this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How to color your hair.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I wonder if you'd do, like, Slovenian humanitarian efforts.
It's you know all what I mean? About helping out Slovenian children in America.
Like, that's, like really what immigrants. It's been.
I don't know. I suppose people in Slovenia would love America a lot more after that. We'd be, like, really popular over there.
Yeah, I guess.
That'd be a benefit.
Yeah, like Kuwait or whatever. Like, or not Kenya, I mean, like, with Obama. Like,
yeah, exactly,
like,
yeah.
Like, they were, like, celebrating the streets when he was elected. Like, they would, in Slovenia, they would be, like, celebrating the streets if she became first lady.
Like, we would score some points in that way.
Yeah. Like, diplomacy with Slovenia just increases dramatically.
I wonder if there, I know the whole presidential election drama has changed dramatically over the past century. I think William McKinley in the late 1800s was they say he had the first modern presidential campaign in the sense that people openly strove to be to get the nomination and then went around the country basically advertising themselves. But I wonder if there's been figures like Trump that have been lost to history that ran to be to hold the nomination and didn't get the nomination, but they're forgotten about. But, you know, in the 1920s or so, I wonder if there are other figures like him that I just don't know about. It'd be kind of fun to find out how often.
I'm
if
sure
this
there
is.
Is
what I'm wondering is, like, is this a novelty? America is just like getting sort of stranger and stranger with its politics, or is this a pretty consistent part of politics?
Yeah, I would say it's not a consistent part of politics. Like, somebody who's completely unqualified for the position is like basically trying to run it, you know, run for it or something like that. Yeah. I think historically, like, you know, most of our leaders have come from the military, you know, and like you go back to Rome or you go back to, you know, like any time throughout history, even up to Eisenhower,
you know,
Ulysses S. Grant, like a lot of them come from the military, or they're these folks who they were like the mayor. And then they became like the county representative, and then they became a state representative, and they've like kind of worked their way up through the system to be, you know, and they're very good with politics. They're good at schmoozing and all the stuff that you have to do to be a good politician. I imagine Obama is very good at that stuff. Like he's a very good schmoozer, I would imagine, you know, because he sounds like so sincere and everything. And the fact is he must inevitably disappoint a lot of people because he probably says like a lot of things to a lot of people and then they never happen, you know?
Yeah, interesting figure.
He's like the opposite. He's like not a good schmoozer.
I think it's. I think his thing too is the idea of a brand, like the Trump. I think that's really interesting, actually. Yeah. The Trump brand, even just the concept of a brand is kind of a new thing. You know, it's like there haven't been that many decades where what's important isn't that it's blue jeans. It's instead that it's Levi's, or what's important isn't that it's a T-shirt, but it's, you know, Abercrombie or whatever the brand is. That's kind of a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
And Trump he's a human being who's made himself into a brand, and he can sell cologne, he can sell anything. And he talks a lot about remaking the American brand, and that is totally how he sees it. It's a brand that needs to be updated and remade. And I think that's just a very interesting, very modern way of looking at a country. Obama would never call America like the brand, I don't think.
No, I hope not.
I don't know what the repercussions of that are. Maybe nothing. Maybe that's just simply his word choice because he's in business and it's superficial. But brand has very different connotations than whatever other word you might choose.
But I mean, I think that's exactly the problem, is like rebranding something is not improving it. You know, you're in fact trying to cover up the fact that you're not improving it. You are essentially like, oh, we're going to change the wrapping on the gum, you know. Oh, now it looks nicer. It's the same gum, you know. And that's the thing, is that's kind of what it sounds like when I hear him say really ignorant shit. You know, is it's kind of like, oh, this, but it's like doesn't represent reality. And so you can't put policies in place that don't reflect reality, you know. So it's like you get rid of all the undocumented immigrants in America. Is crime going to go down? No, because like we see that crime doesn't go down when that happens. Are all of a sudden all these jobs going to get created? Or like are Americans going to go back to picking strawberries out of fields and stuff? I really doubt it, you know? So it's like it's when the policy changes don't reflect reality, it doesn't matter how cool or nice they sound. You know, it's not going to work. So,
yeah. Any final thoughts on the Donald?
I don't know. I guess I felt like I didn't really hear, like, I mean, do you like him? Do you hate him? Like, what do you feel, Keith?
I just feel like I try my best when it comes to these kind of matters to pursue a position of wisdom and not to get too partisan. I'm definitely liberal and a Democrat, and Donald Trump is not someone who speaks for me in any way, shape, or form. But I don't feel heated and angry at all at him. I view it as just, I think George Carlin talked about this. He feels no investment in the situation. So he just says like it's a, when you're born, you get like a ticket to the freak show. When you're born in America, you get a front row seat or something like that. That's kind of how I feel about it. I view it as entertainment. I view it as a circus. I view it as a narrative. That's how I think of it as. Donald Trump is he might as well be fictitious. He might as well be someone in a play or in a book. He's a certain type of character. And the fact that some chunk of Americans applaud him and approve of him, that says something about the American story. And I think that's kind of interesting to learn about. And that's where it ends for me.
I thought it played really well, though, into one of your pet peeves we talked about in our pet peeves episode. Which is about, like, him taking up space.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point,
Because this is the problem that I have with it is, like, everywhere I go, it's all anybody's talking about. You know, people talk about it at work, and they're kind of rolling their eyes while they talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, you turn on the news, it's all that's on the news. It's like, what crazy thing is he going to say next? And as a result, like, nothing important is actually getting talked about again. You know, we moved from the like Caitlyn Jennings thing to this. You know, and it's just unfortunate that like these other issues that are. I mean, I'm not saying trans issues aren't important because they are, and I'm glad that the Caitlyn Jenner thing provided some space for it. But there's a lot more important issues than this one person's transition. There's a lot more important issues than Donald Trump's opinion on John McCain's war record. You know, and that's like bothers me that it's just taking up space that could be used for so much other stuff, you know, that actually is important. Like, wouldn't it be cool if we actually did give like a rundown of all the presidential candidates and like, hey, like these are the people who are like legitimate, you know, and have a shot. These are the people that are going to be in the debates, you know?
Yep.
Like, that's the stuff I want to hear, you know?
Yeah, me too. I wish the debates were more interesting. I wish they weren't as scripted as they seem to be. And I wish, especially in the beginning, I wish there were people who were obscure and had different narratives that could really kind of, you know, throw a wrench into things. Actually, this is all it is. I want it to be a debate. I want it to be a real conversation. I want it to be a real conversation where people are like confronted with ideas that maybe they haven't considered, and they have to say, "Oh wow, I didn't think about it that way, but I still think you're wrong for these reasons."
Yeah,
you know, and I'm frustrated that the debates have turned into a kind of parade.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I think though. I mean, that goes back to like the Nixon JFK thing. Like, unless you're insured that you're going to look good, why would you do it?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I think that's legitimate. Like, I'm not as angry about that because. To me, I think that you do see people get challenged in debates, and I think a lot of people have made major blunders. What's his name? Ted Cruz? Wasn't he the one who couldn't remember the third thing on the list?
What did he say? It may have been.
Or was that Cruz? No. He was the Texas governor, wasn't he?
Rick Perry.
Sorry, yeah. Rick Perry. He was like, I'm going to cut three programs. Like, one, two, and then oops.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And, like, that showed something. It was like, oh, okay, there it is. Like, that's, like, this guy can't even remember his own points. That's an important thing. You know, I think about, like, I don't think this was during a debate, but it's kind of the same idea. Like, the Howard Dean. Like, the, Like, I mean, obviously Chappelle, like, made that really famous, but, you know, that whole thing, it kind of showed, like, whoa, this guy's kind of going off the deep end a little bit, you know? And it's these little character things. The funny thing is, though, is I guess Donald is, like, doing the opposite. He's, like, making these mistakes left and right. Like, I mean, you could see, like, oh, yeah, he said that thing about John McCain, that ended his, like, career.
He's got the Joe Biden halo. He can say a bunch of stupid stuff, but that's part of his shtick, so it's like, it's okay.
That's so bizarre. How do you get the halo, Keith?
You gotta say, this is what it is, like, if you don't want to die from, like, a certain poison, you gotta introduce a tiny bit of it, like, every month for years, and you build up a tolerance, and then all of a sudden, you're invincible.
Yeah.
You gotta say stupid things with a great frequency, but you gotta be lovable, too. You gotta have character, gotta have charisma, and you have to be kind of lovable.
Yeah. Like a lovable fool.
Lovable fool.
I always thought it was mind-blowing when this was when Obama was running the second time, and Joe Biden just kept saying, like, GM is alive and Bin Laden is dead. Like, I was like, that is a weird thing to be toting, you know?
Yeah.
And you could totally see that he probably came up with that. That was actually another thing that Donald Trump said, you know?
What's that?
Is he said, John Kerry, like, criticized him. And he's like, oh, I should be taking advice from a 73-year-old man or whatever who fell off his bike and broke his leg.
Whoa.
Like, it didn't even make sense. Yeah. It didn't even relate at all. Like, he was just like, here's something that... It was, like, so nonsensical. Like, here's just something that happened.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny to see those tiny, like, Seinfeld moments get turned into these giant political issues. Remember when Bush choked on a pretzel?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, just those kinds of...
Or when he massaged the German, like, chancellor or whatever.
Yeah.
Remember that? He came up and gave her a little rub.
Oh, man, you know? She hated that. Yeah. I can't imagine.
That's so funny.
I want to slap him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, anything to add, Dr. Kip?
I don't have anything to add.
All right, I think we're going to wrap it up, and we will talk to all of you folks next week.
Goodbye.
Have a good week.
Hey guys, if you enjoyed the show, check out Kip and Keith on Facebook at Midwestern Social Scientists. You can also tweet them at hashtag Midwestern Social Scientists. Or you can check out their Podomatic page, which is the first place the episodes get released. Don't miss out. Yeah, just check out their Facebook, okay? Thanks.